Hello everybody, and welcome to the Battleball Podcast. Now, it's been a while since I've said that line. It's been roughly over a month. To be exact, it has been a month and 8 days. So I've left it for 5 weeks. And before that, I had left it for 2 weeks. And before that, a month. I'd like to just start by apologising. Obviously, it wasn't the ideal situation, me doing that. Sorry. I think it came in a wave of motivation. Obviously, we got back in the studio with people like Joe Hughes and, Jacob Sutcliffe and Miss Moss as well. Great podcast. She was the last person to go in the studio. And obviously, the last podcast we did was about Prince Andrew, who, as we now know, has settled the civil case against... from Virginia Giuffre. So he's officially paid her out, essentially. Which is quite an astonishing move, really, and it doesn't prove his guilt. It doesn't prove his guilt, but it very much points that way. Whether we'll ever prove his guilt, I don't know, but I think we can all assume pretty heavily, based on the evidence, that he is guilty. So that's the Prince Andrew podcast. You can go and listen to that now if you like. Episode 74: Andrew versus Giuffre. Obviously, Virginia Roberts, probably, I think, as she's now known. And today we're going to be talking about the probably the most popular subject that there is, and that is Ukraine. Now, today's title is episode 75, Diplomacy or Despotism. Now, for anybody that might not know, obviously I'm sure you know what diplomacy is, it's just the way of going more peaceful route through talks. And essentially, a despot is someone that is a tyrant, a dictator, and how many would actually view Putin now, and have done for the last 20 years of his reign over Russia. So, what do we need to know in this case? Now, we know that, obviously, a few days ago, probably earlier last week, we saw that Russia had recognised East Donbass, which is an area in the bottom right region of Ukraine, the very bottom right, close to Russia, which is mainly run by Ukrainian separatists who are pro-Russia, and a lot of the people there are actually pro-Russia as well. Of course, now this is, you know, a disputed thing, so I don't want to get too much involved in that. It's a disputed region. So essentially what's going on is that these guys... obviously pro-Russian, and Putin said, well, we recognise you as an independent state. So a full-on country at this point, okay? And obviously this caused outrage in the in Western communities, and in particular Ukraine, because obviously that is actually still seen as part of sovereign Ukraine. And obviously we know that Ukraine's a massive country, but even then, East Donbass is still a part of it. And taking a chunk out of someone's country just because it's a large country doesn't make it right, does it? So, declared them an independent state, started moving peacekeeper troops in, as he called it, Putin called it. And obviously, the West was not convinced. Absolutely not convinced. And for good reason, it turns out. Now, when it was said that peacekeeping missions were the reason for bringing troops into East Donbass, people then had a question. Why would we need peacekeepers in? Why... Do Russia need to do that, or is this a UN issue, or why are they doing it? Now, it turns out they were actually just moving troops, as I say, suspected by the West, to put them into Ukraine as another point of fighting. Now, currently, I'm going to just quickly get a stat up for you. Just having a look on the BBC website now, and those guys are tracking Russia's invasion. Now, Russia have entered... for what looks like they've got Obolon and Hostomel Airport, which is just on the northwest side of Ukraine, just above Kiev. And they've attacked from Kharkiv, which is in the top right, so the northeast of Ukraine, and obviously, as I mentioned earlier, East Donbass, which is Donetsk, Mariupol, Luhansk, and obviously Crimea, which is a disputed region that isn't actually recognised by the UN as Russian, but obviously in most maps now it's declared a Russian state. So why is this significant? I mean, any war is significant. Obviously, I've spoken in the past and I've said that I'm openly against the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan. I believe that there are some things that we shouldn't battle for, things that are outside of our interests, if you like, and our interests as a country shouldn't be destroying other countries or regime change. Unfortunately, regime change comes in time and at the hands of that regime. And I think it's fair to say that for me, I just don't feel comfortable saying that we went to Iraq for regime change, for WMD's weapons of mass destruction, when actually we went for regime change. Now, although we know that worked, let me just put this clear. Iraq does have a president, but it's also a country torn by terrorism, constantly having civilians murdered by terrorists, and there's disputes everywhere. Is that the country that we had 20 years ago? Is it? I mean, there was other ways of dealing with this. But has regime change been the best thing for Iraq? I don't know. There's a lot of terrorism and a lot of bloodshed and a lot of tragedy there now. But it's the same for a lot of countries, you know, and the West now has to step back from regime change and trying to make the world a free democracy like Europe and America. And instead, you've got to let people get on with what they're doing. And of course, that is not, that's not to say that things like war crimes and crimes against humanity are allowed, because they're not. You know, obviously, we know that the things that Saddam Hussein did are terrible. And believe me, I did not want him as the leader of Iraq. You know, and no, I don't think anybody would. You know, it's for example, you know, obviously what's going on in China with the Uyghur Muslims. Completely condemn that. But how are you going to keep doing regime change forever? And that's what despotism, this is why we're talking about despotism. So obviously a despot, a tyrant, you've got people like Idi Amin in Uganda many years ago. The Butcher of Uganda, as he's now known. And people like Mao Zedong in China, who is believed to have killed 90 million people of his own people. Stalin, who's said to have killed 60 million people. You know, Hitler, he's killed 20 million people. You know, Hideki Tojo in Japan, Pol Pot in Cambodia, and that's just to name a few. You know, you've got Lukashenko in Belarus, Putin in Russia. You know, you've got, obviously, well, a lot of the world at one point was, well, you've got Fidel Castro actually in Cuba. You know, and this is terrible, absolutely terrible. And then this, what the problem is. Despots arrive, and in fact, I'll get you the quote just now, and because I think this quote actually, it really did make you understand what despotism is. Now, obviously, you know, there's different types of despots, people that are just going to kill and, you know, and stuff, and then there's also people that are, you know, just there purely for control but still won't kill their people, or it, you know, it's not a nice situation to be in, you know. And at the end of the day, despots will always arise, you know, tyrants, dictators, you know, and unfortunately that is the future. And I don't mean everywhere is going to be a dictatorship, of course it won't, but it's impossible to stop the rise of dictators because of the fact that there are some people who grow up wanting immense power. They want immense power. You know, we know that Hitler was angered by actions in the past, and in particular, he was angered by, or he was apparently angered by, the Jewish people, which to me didn't make sense. I don't think to anyone it made sense, because Hitler essentially said that Jewish people were taking German jobs, right? What does that sound like, guys? Sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it? He said Jewish people were taking German jobs. The German economy was at a point where it was completely fractured, and there was only one man, one solution to come and fix that: Adolf Hitler. Obviously, he took charge, and he burnt down the German parliament, or his party did. And then he made promises to the German public that he was going to create change, massive, massive change for Germany for the better. And by doing so, he would get rid of Jewish people, get rid of their businesses that have destroyed the economy, create more jobs for German people specifically, and almost bring into life a new Germany. A new Germany that puts German people first, supposedly. Okay, supposedly. Now, this sounds a lot like Brexit, doesn't it? You have to admit, because that hatred for immigrants that people were building up inside themselves, the whole idea of, wow, immigrants, these are the people that are taking our jobs, taking our businesses, taking our housing, taking our benefits. They've taken everything on or off us, and there's only one person that can stop this happening, and that's Boris Johnson and the Conservatives. It's an awfully similar campaign to encourage people to dislike immigrants, but to also encourage people to think, what about British jobs? And believe me, I've got nothing wrong with wanting British people to have British jobs, but we've got a system in this country that allows immigrants from around the world and Europe as well, and Eastern Europe, to come and work here. And there is people like Nigel Farage that every year will post pictures or little things about, you know, World War II remembrance, or, you know, Poppy Day, or, you know, Remembrance Day, whatever. How can he do that? How can he do that when his campaign almost replicated that of Adolf Hitler's campaign to get rid of Jews? How can he do that? And that may seem to some people like an extreme view, but how can you honestly say to me, look me in the face and go, Hitler and Brexit campaigns, completely different? Because they're not. The only thing Brexit was missing was the physical segregation and the execution. That is it. That is it. Because, you know, at the end of the day, British aren't killing immigrants when they come into the country. Obviously, a lot of them die, unfortunately, when illegal immigrants or migrants, or I don't know how you phrase this, but a lot of people coming into the country illegally, per se, are killed, unfortunately, at sea. So you could argue that, you could definitely argue that there's a lack of morality when it comes to how the government deals with migration, you know, and illegal immigrants, etc., asylum seekers. You know, I don't know what phrase you will have to use for that, but bear with me on that. Now, what does this mean for the future? Now, we're talking about Russia and Ukraine in particular today, so I don't want to go off on a Brexit tangent. Now, I've obviously briefly mentioned that Russia are invading Ukraine. They have been since early this week. You could argue they've been doing it for the last 8 years after Crimea in 2014, in which basically the Ukrainian army could not fight back because of the capabilities of Russia. However, now President Volodymyr Zelensky, who I think is a real leader, it's about time that we look at what he has been doing for Ukraine. And he has so far took up guns and said, I want everybody in this country and in the capital, Kiev, if you are 18 to 60 and are a man, to get a gun and go and fight. You have to. Vladimir Klitschko, Vitaly Klitschko, who is also the mayor of Kiev, Alexander Usyk, three heavyweight champion boxers, all of them now fighting in Ukraine alongside each other, along with the president, Volodymyr Zelensky, the prime minister, and various other politicians. And also, I believe some footballers are still out there in Kiev now. So, When will this end? Many people ask. When will it end? Now, it's a tough question to ask. A very tough question to ask. Because, of course, we all want to know, is it going to end? And I would say yes. I think it will. Now, of course, there's always the view of Russia having over 900,000 soldiers and Ukraine having 202,000, roughly. Well, I think Russia probably has about 880,000 now. 890,000, because obviously a lot of them have been killed by Ukraine so far. And obviously Ukraine obviously doesn't have as much. They don't have as many weapons, they don't have as many tanks, they don't have as many anything. Obviously, because of the size of Russia and how much it produces, etc. And also, the Cold War gave them a lot of time to stock up on certain weapons and etc. So, what is the situation? I mean, Ukraine have quite well fought off the Russians out of Kiev. There was a fight in the streets last night and they fought really well. Russia have now started to strike oil and gas for refineries and stations as well. I mean, it's going to be quite difficult to get fuel to Ukraine, but obviously I'm sure the West is working on solutions to this as soon as possible. But we saw videos of Russian tanks out of fuel on highways across Ukraine. They've got a massive problem. The supply of fuel, not having enough ammunition, not having enough of things, is a serious issue for Russia. And it's quite fair to say that. And also, a lot of the Russian soldiers didn't know where they were going. That's a quote from the video. A lot of them don't know where they're going. And this is the thing. Do we blame, like in the Nazi regime, do you actually blame the German people, or do you blame the regime that has forced them to think and feel a certain way? Has used fear tactics to manipulate them into feeling a certain way? Do you think that? Because at the end of the day, for me, I don't blame it on the German people. I blame it on the Nazis. If you were a proud Nazi that believed in that ideology without having to be manipulated, then you are an evil person that I don't feel should be on this planet. Because you are not welcome. However, are you someone that has just lived in Germany and someone has said, you know, well, I've just been told that this is what Jewish people are doing. I've been told to do this. I've been told to, you know, at the end of the day, I don't blame you at all. You know, you are being manipulated into thinking a certain way, and unfortunately you feel that the Nazi regime are right in saying that when they're not. But those people aren't the actual problem. The Russian people aren't the problem. It's the regime. It's Lavrov. It's Putin. It's the oligarchs such as Abramovich, the Chechen leader, Kasparov. You know, it's a collective issue that needs to be solved. I think Ukraine will hold off for a while. I hope. I really do, because I know people that are from Ukraine. Thankfully, none of them living there. However, I'm sure that they have family there, and it's a horrible situation. So, all I can say now is that I hope that Ukraine fight off Russia. And also, I think that if Ukraine fight off Russia, this will be the end of Russia as a global superpower in this form as we know. I genuinely don't think that this would work. Look at Afghanistan, it's the graveyard of empires. The Soviet Union tried to invade them, and what happened? The empire completely fell. Completely. So, use that knowledge that I've just given you and build off it. Do you think that Russia as a dictatorship, an authoritarian dictatorship, will still exist if Russia was to lose against Ukraine in a war? I don't think it will. I think the Russian people will turn against Putin and they'll have him murdered in the street. I think they'll have him killed in the street. But now we must also look back at the fact that, unfortunately, the Ukraine war is happening. And therefore, we should look back at Russian finances and how they flow through the British political system. through Labour, taking donations from the Chinese spies, as they've now been noted, to the Conservatives taking vast amounts of money from Russia. It needs to be dealt with, and the government needs to be more transparent with the British people about who it's being donated, how much money is being donated to them, and who by. Because if Russian oligarchs are donating to the Conservative Party and the British people do not know about it, I am not happy about that. And I want to see a full release of who is donating to the Conservatives and what intentions they have. Because I full well know that the Russians aren't just donating to the Conservatives. Full well know. They're donating to the Conservatives because they have one thing in their mind, and that is power over the British electorate. So just take that in mind. But anyway, that's my prediction. I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this today. I'm going to go a bit deeper into despots, and I might even do a little series on it. Diplomacy and despots. Now, diplomacy is looking probably very dim. I don't think it will happen. I think it'll only happen on Russia's terms, which is what they're proposing now. Belarus obviously urging Ukraine to take that, but I'm not sure how, if I would. And we're going to have to wait and see. So, thank you all for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. This is episode 75 with me, Jay Martin, obviously here at the Battleball Podcast. Sorry it's been a while. We're back to uploading every week, every Sunday now, just so it gives me time to edit and do schoolwork, etc. Today is the 27th of February, and I really hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. It's going out at 12 p.m, okay? So make sure you stay tuned. Thank you all for listening. Episode 75, Diplomacy or Despotism. Did you enjoy that episode of the Battleball Podcast? Well, if so, share, follow, like, do what you need to do. We would really, really appreciate it. Do tune into the next episode. If you're listening on Thursday, the next episode's on Sunday. And if you're listening on Sunday, the next episode's on Thursday. But any day that you are listening, take a listen to all of our more than 50 episodes available, and do share them and let us know what you think. Thank you for listening.